this the entire podcast.
We should just have it playing real quiet in the background.
We might get more listeners if this
every
is
point
playing.
We make, we have to say whoa.
We could end every topic this week with whoa. I'm sure we'll get some feedback going, guys, that was terrible.
That was
whoa,
terrible.
That was really bad.
Whoa. I
mean, hey, guess what? Whoa, that was not good.
Like, whoa.
Can't help myself when it comes to Black Rob.
Nope.
Did you ever watch Rap City? Big Tigger?
Yeah.
Remember the basement?
Yes.
So, listening to this instrumental and looking around our de facto recording studio right now, I feel like we're onto something.
That's it right there. You know the T.I. Double Gerd, Big Tigger is the Wizard's hype man.
Is he?
Yes.
Wow.
I want to say that's, yeah, that's him.
I have no idea. Wow. Seems to me. I think it's about time.
I think it is.
It's about time. All right. It's episode 4.
Episode 4.
We're in Luckett, Virginia. My name is Matt Deanna.
Hi, I'm Steve Harney.
And this is The Long 2. It is episode 4, like we just said. It is Thursday night. There are no games on tonight.
No games. This is basketball free. This
I feel kind of caught up. So the natural thing to do is to record a podcast.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate it. We've got, we got 4 different series to talk about. And quite honestly, I only want to talk about those 4 series because we've heard so much about the MVP before it was already awarded that I'm burnt out by it.
I am too.
So,
congrats to Steph Curry.
Absolutely.
He
well
should have won.
That's
I love
awesome.
That he won.
It's fantastic. Great. That's no slight to anyone that didn't win, but good for
absolutely.
Him. That was great. All right, so we got 4 series. Where do you want to start, the East or the West?
Let's go ahead and start in the East.
You want to start in the East? We got the East Coast flavor.
Yeah.
I feel like since no one tends to favor the East Coast in these series, that we tend to skew in that direction. We're on the East Coast. We can always be available to watch those games.
Yes.
I got an idea for what we should do this week.
All right.
Turns out every series is tied 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
That's really nice, especially because in the first round, everything went 3-0, it seemed like, except for the Clippers Spurs, right? So if everything's tied, let's have some overreactions.
Yes.
Let's overreact to some things 2 games in.
Yes.
Right?
Let's go.
Let's see what we can put together.
All right, who do you want to hit first?
Let's go with the Bulls and the Cavs.
All right. What's your overreaction so far? What overreactions are you hearing?
My overreaction is, look how important Kevin Love is.
Yeah.
Look how major figure J.R. Smith. Oh my gosh, the Cavs can't survive without J.R. Smith. Come on.
They survived.
They did. The series is tied. They lost the first at home, yes. J.R. Smith, I think his value is being a little overstated at this point.
Absolutely.
I have a little concern about that. But in general, I mean, I think it's important to their team. It obviously messes up the continuity. I think the larger issue here is, and I'm not saying this as an advantage to either team, is the matchups. These are some of the weirdest matchups you can see, I think, right now, between 2 starting fives. Because even when J.R. Smith comes back, it's still weird. So I think when the Cavs are on defense, you've got Kyrie guarding Rose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever their nominal 2 guard is, so it's Ben Shumpert, it'll be J.R. Smith, is going to guard Dunleavy.
There we go.
Wow, weird
Dunleavy,
slip there.
Yeah.
Is guarding Dunleavy. LeBron's on Butler, for the most part. He's going to rove over and cover Rose sometimes. He may even drop down. That's another issue.
He can guard all 5 positions if he wanted to.
Right, absolutely. But then it gets a little dicey because you've got Gasol and Noah. And you can hide someone on Noah, and I talked about this 2 episodes ago. Jared Dudley with the Bucks, they were using him to guard Noah because their defense is so good. They could stretch the floor out, they're long, and then they could hide him a little bit there because Noah's not an offensive threat now, right?
No, he's not, but I would beg to differ that he is an offensive rebounding threat.
Absolutely.
And he's a very good passer for a big man.
Absolutely.
And I think people do put, you know, they tend to put defenders on him that are not as fast, or I would even say lazier defenders on him, which is a bad thing because he is a hustle player.
Right, absolutely. It's tricky because since they got Pau Gasol this year, last year the offense used to run through Noah in the high post. He's a good passer. He's a good playmaker still.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not an offensive threat. This year he's been a little out of sorts. It's kind of, the fit has been weird. They've had all season to get this right, and it's still a little clunky, a little herky-jerky.
They are, yeah.
Interesting idea, though, and I saw a little bit of this so far, is you put LeBron on Noah, which doesn't at first seem to make sense, but it gives him a little bit of time to rest, and then during that rest, it's easier for him to then go guard Butler in spurts and Rose in spurts and then even Gasol. So I think here's the issue. It's widely talked about that LeBron doesn't want to be a four. He doesn't want to get down there and bang with the big guys and everything, right? Well, if he doesn't guard Pau Gasol, who does? Mozgov doesn't seem to have the mobility to stay with him.
But Mozgov's under, he's a rim guarder. He needs to stay around that rim. He's a rim protector. He doesn't want to step out with Gasol shooting those jump shots, which you see in game one and game two. I mean, Gasol had excellent games in both, and there's really no adjustments the Cavs have made to stifle that. And I want to say the Cavs are thinking right now, Gasol, you're going to have to beat us. We're going to give you these jumpers.
Yeah.
Right? You know, hit them. I don't think I'm guessing they're going with the mindset that, you know, he's just not going to hit enough to really threaten us.
This is why I like Tristan Thompson in the starting lineup, because you put him on Gasol and then you let Mozgov bang around with Noah. Because they're going to put Gasol on the pick and roll, and Thompson's quicker to adjust, and he can deal with that. You put Mozgov on Gasol, and that's a clunky fit also. So I think the matchups are really weird.
They are.
The other thing I was saying, I think that's not so much where you miss Kevin Love there, but when they didn't start Thompson and they had Mike Miller in the lineup, that was even weirder.
Yeah.
So it seemed like an odd fit. In that first game, I think they shot like three. In the first half of the first game, they shot like 3 of 12 from three-point land. The Cavs did. And they were missing Love and J.R. Smith, but where they were getting their threes were from the corners, and they weren't getting them from the wings. Those above-the-break wings, that's where Love and J.R. Smith were going to kill you. Mm-hmm. J.R. Smith will bring back some of that, but they are going to miss Love's three-point shooting a lot, I think.
Oh, big time.
I don't know how they replace that and still stay competitive on defense, because the Mike Miller transition doesn't work if you just do a straight swap with him and Love. So matchups are weird.
They are. They're very weird. And I don't know how consistent the Cavs' three-point shooting is going to be without Love in there. And it's not just Love shooting, but it is the open looks. I mean, let's face it, guys in the NBA can shoot when they're open.
Yep.
You know, when they're able to step into a shot, everybody's a shooter. And that's, you know, J.R. Smith got a lot of his looks because Love was that extra guy to pull it out. I mean, they shot 26% from three-point line in game one, shot 46%. Somewhere in that 30% range, I think, in that middle range is where they're going to end up sitting for the rest of this series.
Let's overreact, though. When they shoot more than 40% from three-point land, they win the game every time in the series, right? Yeah. There we go. That's all it's going to take.
And what about the Bulls' inconsistency on offense? Where's the reaction? You know, the overreaction to that. They cannot put games together back and forth, you know, back-to-back games. They shot 50% and 55% from the field and from three-point line in game one. Game two was 40% from the field, which still is not bad.
No, but they can't shoot 40%.
They dropped down to 31%.
You got to shoot better.
You got to shoot better. If you want to beat the Cavs, you have to shoot better.
Yeah, against that defense, they should be shooting a lot better.
They should. They looked out of sorts, and sometimes the Bulls just don't look like they want it. They don't have that tenacity. And in game two, they didn't have that tenacity, and they don't carry that through. I'm sorry. I mean, it's still LeBron, who is, you know, arguably the best player in the league. When he wants to be, he is so dominant on both ends. You can't stop. And Kyrie is, you know, game one, that he had a few stretches there where you're just like, this kid is a freak.
Here's the problem. You've heard about the day's rest thing with the Bulls, right? And specifically Derrick Rose.
Yes.
That when he only gets one day of rest, so they play every other day, he's only getting like 15 points a game in the playoffs. His shooting's down, his assists are down, his turnovers are up. Everything is less than good for him. On two or more days rest, he's getting 25 points a game. His shooting's better, his passing's better, his turnovers are reduced. I am scanning the schedule right now, and between now and through game six, which would be next week, the games are every other day from here on out. They continue to be every other day, starting tomorrow. If you're listening to this now, Friday.
It's every
other day.
It's over.
It's over. It's over. The Cavs have to win.
Cavs have to win.
Cavs have to win, even without Kevin Love. J.R. Smith's coming back.
Yes, J.R. Smith.
They're going to shoot three-pointers.
Who is, you know, the way they've been talking and reporting, you know, J.R. Smith is absolutely the NBA's greatest three-point shooter ever.
Now, if the Bulls can get through this week and get it to a Game 7, that'll be on Sunday, May 17th. Coming off of a Thursday, May 14th game, that'll be the two games rest.
I think
so. Here's my prediction. If it goes to game seven, the Bulls will win in Cleveland because of rest, and that's it. Nothing else matters. It'll be all decided on rest.
I like it. I like Thibodeau better than I don't even know what the coach.
Dave Blatt,
whatever.
Or LeBron James, depends on who you define as the coach.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he doesn't coach.
That's wrong.
And I'm pretty sure he learned English on the
You and the people that are doing this are messed up.
I don't
Y'all have no respect for him. That's rude.
I don't see many adjustments coming from them. So if they have a game one type play, they're not going to win. If they play like game two, so they basically need LeBron to take over and Kyrie to also take over,
which is entirely possible.
Yes, it's absolutely possible.
The trick is the driving kick. Who do they kick to? Now they kick back to J.R. Smith. He's known to shoot 17 three-pointers in a game. That's fine. So they can still get that production.
Mm-hmm. But he will shoot it whether he's hitting or not. So it could be a detriment. And the Bulls out-rebound. Now, the Cavs rebounded much better in game two. But typically the Bulls, I'm going to give them the edge on rebounding.
They should. Kevin Love's not there.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to say. If this goes to less than seven games, I think the Cavs will win. If it goes to seven games, irrationally, I will say the Bulls will win because they'll have that extra day of rest. That is what matters in this.
Love it.
Part of me hopes the Bulls win because all this stuff I'm hearing lately, like the Ramona Shelburne piece earlier this week and just the general vibe this season, is that Thibodeau is out.
Yeah,
that's kind of a sad end to it all.
Mm-hmm.
If they go to the conference finals, maybe he stays. I don't know. A lot of Bulls diehards are really on the fence about keeping, staying, whatever. Before we move on to the next series, though, we did get a Twitter question.
Oh.
So you can at me at HoopNerd, at Hoop_nerd. Send us your questions. We love to discuss them on the air, on the podcast. So Josh Planos, right? He writes for a variety of sites, including The Washington Post, which I know you read.
Yes.
And he asked, what changes to the Bulls' team space have you observed with Derrick Rose playing heavy minutes during the postseason? You probably don't know what team space is.
Let me hear the analytical definition. Okay.
So team space has been something I've been doing all year on nyloncalculus.com, right? It's where I showed you those charts last week, right?
Yeah.
Look at densities of shot selection, overlay them on top to show a lineup and how they shoot, right? So what he's asking is, how have they done with and without Derrick Rose, especially in the playoffs? Now, regular season Bulls, mwah, thing of beauty. I love that offense. I love it, I love it, I love it. A lot of people don't seem to like it, and I just love the spacing behind it, right? I thought it was just wonderful. It's interesting because Derrick Rose, he makes that thing beautiful because he is the primary scorer from the elbows above. Like, so from top of the break three, down to the elbows and then at the rim. It's almost a straight line with him, right? When he is not playing, so I didn't put together the charts, but I did analyze the data before we got here, right? There is a gap in that. They're still getting some shots there, but they're not getting heavy production in that area. It's like a V from
right.
the wings
I gotcha.
Down to the rim. There's pretty much a gap in there. You would think Jimmy Butler, Aaron Brooks could just fill that in, right? But the beauty of Rose and Jimmy Butler as a tandem is Jimmy Butler does his best scoring at the rim and then from the baselines out to the corner and then to the above the break three. So he automatically is doing his best work in the areas Rose isn't. So they're the perfect complements for each other.
The interesting thing is
that when Rose is out, they're just not scoring from those areas very prolifically. Paul Gasol is a borderline legendary mid-range jump shooter, so he covers those areas Rose didn't, hence why the three of them work so well together, because they cover most of the court at that point. And then the other two are arguably just filler. You've got Dunleavy across the rest of the threes and Noah at the rim, a little mid-range jumper. They miss that production. So back to the rest thing, but when Rose is rested and playing a lot of minutes, he is doing things for that offense that they're not getting elsewhere. They're not getting it from Aaron Brooks. They're not getting it from Kurt Heinrich. They don't play Mirotić more than like 7 minutes a game now. I don't know if it's the injury or what, but he's just not getting the time.
Yeah, so. I would like to know that too, because I think he presents a mismatch for for Cleveland as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's another guy. He can shoot the three, especially if he's open and stepping into it, and he's a streaky shooter. He gets going. He can light it up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's huge when you have a big man that can do that.
Last thing on the Bulls in this offense, though, what I did do this week from nyloncalculus.com, very proud of this article. I thought it was kind of interesting. I looked at the Eastern Conference and the four teams that remain, and I would argue any of them can make the finals at this point. I think that's a fair statement to make. I compared all of their scoring spaces to the past 16 years of or past 18 years of NBA champs to see which ones they compare closest to. Would you like to venture a guess on this year's Bulls, who they compare the closest to? What a loaded question, right? Yeah, right on the spot. Any team in the past 18 years? Spurs, Bulls, Lakers, Heat.
I'm going to go with the way they play. Let's go with... it's got to be one of the Spurs teams.
You will be wrong, because it's the 2009-2010 Los Angeles Lakers. Ah. You know part of the reason why? This is borderline cheating. Both teams have Paul Gasol.
There you go.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
But he covers areas other players don't often.
I got you.
So that offense, I still think, is a thing of beauty, and so be it. Shall we move on?
Let's move on.
Wizards-Hawks. Give me your overreactions. Who's going to win this series?
Oh, my overreaction? Mm-hmm. John Wall's got 5 fractures. They're done.
Well, there you have it. Now, before these 5 fractures came up, you had said before the series started that you thought the Wizards would win in 5 or 6 games. How do you feel about that right now?
I think, obviously they lost game 2 with John Wall sitting. The score was... that final score was not how the game played out. You know what I mean? That was a huge difference. They lost by... what did they end up losing by? Almost like 16 or something like that.
I think so, yeah.
But that game was close, and that was down to basically the last 6 minutes, and Washington just unraveled. I think had they had John Wall there, they would win that game. They're coming back 2-0, and I think they have a good chance of winning it in 5.
Think 5 games is possible?
No. With John Wall's status being uncertain, you got to throw a lot onto Bradley Beal's shoulders and Sessions' shoulders, and you got to get some of these other guys really playing ball well. I don't know if they can do it. If the Hawks come out and they're starting to fire on all cylinders again, I mean, they're one of the best teams in the East. And I don't know if Washington can do it without John Wall. I mean, that is a major piece.
Game 2 was a friendly reminder of how good the Hawks really were this season.
Yeah.
I mean, that Nets series was weird. I don't know what the deal was. Game 1, to a certain extent, was weird. They missed a lot of open shots, which we'll get to in a little bit about the whole open shot thing. But, I mean, they lost by 16 in that game, by the way, in Game 2.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I mean, the Wizards haven't shot well in either game.
No, but they don't shoot well. I mean, they're just not a great shooting team.
Turns out they don't shoot well.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, your potential finals matchup. Do you think realistically that the Wizards can win a game in this series without John Wall if he's not back for the rest of the season? Can they win a game?
Can they win a game?
Can they win a game?
They can win a game, but they can't win the series.
I have legitimate concerns. Their bench has scared the hell out of me all year. I mean, what is it? Rasul Butler was unbelievable during the year. He doesn't really play much at this point now. They've got a legit backup point guard issue. I mean, they got to do some funky things with the lineup at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And their bench was already a little shaky. John Wall is amazing. Breaking news, John Wall is amazing. But sometimes you can't fully appreciate the value of a guy until he's not in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he can't come back. I don't know. I don't know how they win the series, but I honestly don't know how they win another game. There's my overreaction.
You know, I think they could play, a spirited game, in an emotion. They can dig out an emotional victory maybe at home. And I'm thinking if they're going to win a game, it's going to be game 3.
Okay.
That first game at home, emotional coming off John Wall being hurt and everything like that. I think it plays into them grabbing one, and then, Atlanta just kind of saying, all right.
I mean, in game 2, they went 9 deep, and Garrett Temple got some time, but he's a wing. I mean, there was no other point guard that played that game.
No, Sessions had a decent game.
He had a very good game.
Yeah.
Sessions looked great. He had 21 points. I mean,
he had
4 assists, but the thing is, you're getting 12 assists from Wall, and Wall runs that offense.
He does.
Wall on a break is a thing of beauty. Beal knows exactly where to go when Wall's running the break. Wall doesn't have to look literally and find him behind the arc on a drive. I mean, it's just the timing is there, and they're not going to be able to replace that.
They're going to have to really rearrange their whole tempo. They're going to have to beat – I think if they want to beat Atlanta, they're going to have to play big. And they're going to need Nene to actually contribute something. And I don't know if it's his lack of playing time or the way they have him in there, but he's doing nothing.
He was 0 for 5 last game.
Yeah, and he had
minus 16.
I would like to see Chris Humphreys maybe get in there. I think he can do maybe a little bit of something. Otto Porter is, I think he's still playing. He had a good game.
Game two, he had a good game. Yeah.
And he's going to need to continue that. He's going to take it to another. He has to take it to another level.
He was 6 for 12. I think
Bradley Beal has to take it to another level, too.
Porter was 6 for 12, and he was 2 for 3 from deep. I mean, he had 15 points. Otto Porter has looked good this playoff. There's no question about that. It's very nice to see.
He's been great on the defensive end, rebounding. And it's not as much, you know, he's grabbing the actual rebounds or getting the steals, but, I mean, just disruption. You know, he's been disruptive. He's gotten pokes, pops, you know, and he needs to continue to do that. And then, you know, not only continue, but he needs to take it to another level. So we're asking a lot of guys to play better than they have all year.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, this offense is, it's predicated on John Wall making stuff happen.
I mean, this is different than losing a two guard, you know, or even losing your big man. I mean, this is the guy. This is your floor general. He is the one doing everything.
I think he's averaging about 12 and a half assists in the playoffs alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just don't know where that kind of playmaking comes from. Nene has had a funky series. I mean, he was 0 for 4 in the first game, and what I say, he was 0 for 5 in the second game. I mean, it's rough. I don't know. The thing with the Hawks is the one thing you could exploit was the front line, especially with Millsap seemingly still hurt, it seems like. I mean, it's hard to tell for sure. Horford's hand or finger might have some sort of injury also. So they're banged up. Who isn't banged up front?
Yeah.
But rebounding is typically an area you can exploit, which, since they're so hell-bent on the Nene Gortat lineup to start the game, you, to your point, Humphreys could get some boards. I just don't know. I don't know. I would be concerned. I think the hopes of the Wizards hinge on the wrist of John Wall. Hinge wrist.
See what I got there? You. Look at that. That was so close. So clever.
Yeah.
Snug it right in. But, yeah. honestly, I agree with you. You know, what's going to take him over the top is it's going to need to be an emotional victory. It will come, you know, from all odds against them right now, and they're going to bust through it. You know, they're all going to they went 90 games.
They went 90.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that means all 9 of those guys are going to have a chip on their shoulder and they're going to take it. You know, Butler's going to shoot like he did.
He didn't even
play. The first year. I know.
Yeah. What I'm saying is him and Humphreys didn't even play. Seemingly, the regular season versions of them would need to come off the bench and produce.
Absolutely. Bit, you know? I mean, if you got a fraction of Rasul Butler,
mm-hmm,
the way he was shooting in the beginning of the year to come in now, I mean, that was huge.
So we've alluded to it a little bit, and I want to address this before we go too far, because I feel we would be remiss if we did not touch upon this. Seth Partnow wrote what I think is a gem of an article today for Nylon Calculus, and it's talking about what actually is a good shot. So when we talk about contested versus uncontested, there's stats to track all this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
They measure the distance from the closest defender when that shot was taken. And presumably, right, the more open you are, the better the shot is, right? Regardless.
I got you.
But the whole point, or one of the points that I got from this article is, especially when you talk about the Wizards, who seem to run an offense that's so contrary to popular sentiment of how you run an offense at this point, and they've flat out said, whoever's got the open shot takes it. Whenever you've got an open shot, you take it. It's less systematic and more opportunistic.
Yeah.
That this actually might lend some credence to that idea. That when we sit here and statistically measure open versus contested and what the right shot is, there's so many things at play that we're not often fully appreciating. Injuries, fatigue, days between games, right? Who's hurt, who's not, who's taking that shot from where on the court? How do they normally perform in this game situation at this time of the game, down by this much? There is a lot of factors which we can measure, which we're probably not right now. And then you combat that with extremely small sample sizes, and then you further of the playoffs and further compound that with, when you're only playing one opponent at a time, the only thing the Atlanta Hawks are thinking about right now is, how do I beat the Washington Wizards? Mm-hmm. How do I do it? How do I beat them as soon as possible? When all your game planning is devoted to that and all your resources are devoted to that one opponent, a lot of this you might just have to throw out the window. Yeah. Because now it comes down to, we've got seven games. What you can start to analyze is some of the micro dynamics that are going on there between player to player at a matchup-based level. But there's so much else that goes into just game planning against one team that I think it's really hard to start to extrapolate some of the broader trends we've observed over the regular season down to a specific series. I don't say that in defense of the Wizards' offense normally, or as opposed to it. I do know that we saw the playoff version of the Wizards in the first round. It was a thing of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen as much of it in round two.
No.
Which, I don't know.
Game one was better. I mean, it was there, but there was pocket. It was ups and downs. It wasn't Raptors style.
Game one was less small ball than round one, but it was more small ball than the regular season.
Yeah.
So it was an attempt at a happy medium, and hey, it worked. Came back.
And the Hawks are different size.
Game
teams,
two. Yeah. So this is the whole point. Also, then you throw game two out of the window because John Wall's not there. What happens game three?
Who knows.
But what actually makes a good shot is a debate that could go on for a long time.
I tell you what, you know who we're going to see. We're going to see what Randy Whitman's got.
Yeah,
coaching chops wise, this is big time. This is where coaching and picking these matchups, like you said, you got one team to focus on. You don't have to focus on anybody but getting through the Atlanta Hawks. What can you do? How can you beat the Atlanta Hawks without your floor general on there?
Yeah, well, because same point. All your focus is now on, how do I stop Kyle Korver? How do I prevent him from getting open three-pointers?
Mm-hmm.
And Nets couldn't do it. He still shot like 12 a game or so.
Their offense
is so good that they're still able to make that happen.
They're still only shooting about 34% for the series from three-point line. So that's... You know, they didn't shoot the lights out last game. But both games, the Wizards gave them way too many opportunities. They got to clean up that glass. And maybe that is saying, okay, we're going to give up some of these threes, but we're going to ensure we get the rebounds off of these missed threes. They're not shooting, you know, let's tempt fate, you know, with them shooting at this in this 30% range, let's go for it and then beat them down on the inside.
It's dangerous. It's
gamble, dangerous, but what else?
Sure.
I mean, what do you have to lose? You lost your star player. You might as well try something. Where else are we strong? We're strong on the backside. Let's get our big men in there. Let's dominate the boards. You know, make sure we cover the best shooters they have, and let these other, you know, shooters. If we're going to give up a few, we'll give up a few. But if they're going to end up shooting 30% for the game, you know, 35% for the game, I think they can live with that if they're, you know, pulling the rebounds and taking the wizard type shots on the other end.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of injured point guards, let's move to the West.
Oh,
and let's start with the Lakers. The Lakers.
I got you.
I saw Los Angeles there, and we were talking about this all before. I don't know what happened. I'd like to apologize to anyone that still made it this far into episode 4 of the Long 2 podcast
that we just made.
Brought to you by Nylon Calculus and the good folks at HP Basketball. The L.A. Clippers and the Houston Rockets is also tied 1-1. Chris Paul was out games 1 and game 2. What are your overreactions to this series?
My initial overreaction, Chris Paul's not playing. They're going to lose.
Everything's done.
What's not an overreaction is, but actually a thing of beauty, is watching Blake Griffin. He just looks phenomenal out there. I mean, on all ends, every aspect. Even from handling the ball.
Oh, yeah.
His jump shot. I mean, talk about a guy who's put in the work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, looked fantastic. And I just feel so horrible that his main point guard is Austin Rivers right now.
Oof. Oof.
It just hurts. You know, and Rivers didn't play that bad game one. They won. But game two, he didn't play good at all. And he had a horrible turnover at the end trying to... I mean, it's just little things. And, I mean, you're missing Chris Paul. Chris Paul at 25% is better than anything else they have on that bench.
In
that point guard position.
Yeah, I mean, so they're in a similar position to the Wizards. Austin Rivers is not a natural point guard.
No, he's not.
I mean, I'm not trying to... I'm going to be one of the few people that isn't going to talk bad about Austin Rivers right now on the internet. But Austin Rivers is not a natural point guard, so they don't have a legitimate backup for Chris Paul. Just like the Wizards, they have Sessions at least, but then they don't have anyone behind him, right? So, I mean, Austin was a plus three and plus minus in game one. He was a minus five in game two. Neither is, you know, glaringly bad. He had 17 points in the first game. It's, 5 of 12 shooting. He was 4 of 8, so the shooting was better, but in 10 points. But
it's not Austin Rivers as a player. It's Austin Rivers as the point guard.
Well, and to that point, he had 3 assists in game one and 2 assists in game two.
And sometimes it's not even what you do. I mean, you could have a quiet game totally, but it's controlling tempo. It's knowing when to speed it up, when to slow it down. What to do. You know, hey, let's focus on getting this matchup over here. It's being that general on the floor, knowing what's going on in every single matchup, every player, at what time, what the score is. You know where the fouls. Here's another what we talked about last week. Hack a Dwight.
Mm-hmm.
Almost brought him back into it.
Yeah. Here's my thing. In game one, Blake Griffin had 13 assists. That is
He had awesome. A triple-double in game one. 26, again. 14, and 13.
Only 4 assists in game two.
But I mean, 34 and 15.
As a creator, he's doing beautiful things. The Blake to DeAndre lob is a legitimate weapon. I mean, it's what the Rockets want the Josh Smith to Dwight Howard lob to be, except they've got weaker versions exponentially at both
Josh
of those.
Josh Smith likes to shoot it.
Hey, respect to Josh Smith. This is the Long 2 podcast.
He likes to shoot the Long 2.
Watch your mouth. But, I mean, it's weird to say, but when Blake isn't creating like that, part of that, I think, is a lot of times off of Blake's assists, you've got a secondary coming from Chris Paul. He's still setting up the play, mm-hmm. and then Blake is making the play that leads to the actual assist. But, their offense obviously just doesn't hum the same. Realistically, they broke even without Chris Paul in either game. It was kind of a foregone conclusion when they won game one that Chris Paul would stay game two because they were playing on house money at that point.
Exactly.
So they go back to LA with the series tied 1-1. I mean,
CP comes back.
I still look at them like I feel like they're in the driver's seat. Houston hasn't looked good since the last couple games of the Mavs series, it seemed like. I mean,
this was the first game that I've actually seen Harden play at his MVP level, or mm-hmm. you know what I mean, but yeah. where he's the number 2 vote getter for MVP of the league.
Mm-hmm.
He turned it up and he played phenomenal.
Yeah, 32 points, yes. Absolutely.
That was James Harden. That was James Harden that we've been seeing all
15
year.
15 foul shots, 15 for 15.
Exactly. That's what he does. Mm-hmm. That's his thing. How about a little shout out though to JJ Redick, who's been playing a lot of defense on James Harden. Who would have thought that?
So he's a sneaky good defender.
He's a sneaky good defender.
I think it's Andrew Hahn, who writes for Clipper Blog, has been saying this for quite a while now. Shout out to Andrew, that J.J. Redick is actually the matchup the Clippers want on James Harden. Like, he's dialed into how he plays and is a stopper.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think when people just hear it for J.J. Redick, he can't guard him.
No, but
so
you got to
stop
is,
and think about it.
Yeah.
He can lock him down at least a little bit. I mean, it's so very cliche, but you can only hope to contain Harden to a point. And one of the keys, Goldsberry talked about this earlier this year, is how much Harden facilitates. And that drive, what it really does for the rest of the offense, I mean, it makes things hum, akin to John Wall with the Wizards. There's so many people that benefit off that drive for open three-pointers,
absolutely.
Him getting fouled, whatever it is, they're generating their points. It's predicated on that. Who do you like in this series going forward now?
Here's my... Chris Paul comes back game three. I think they're in the driver's seat. I think the only way the Rockets can win here on out, and that's game three, and until they clinch, the Rockets will need James Harden to play at an MVP level every game. And that means, I mean, he needs to score, I would say, at least 28 points per,
ooh,
maybe in the 30s, just because he has to. He has to get to the free throw line. You
Which
know,
isn't
that,
far-fetched.
That 12 to 15 times. No, it's not far-fetched. And he's a scorer, and I think he's the biggest threat. And like you said, when he's rolling like that, when he's scoring, when he's getting to the line and playing with that, you know, that kind of James Harden, you know, swag and, mm-hmm. you know, that intensity, they're extremely hard to beat. Dwight Howard gets into it better. The whole team plays better. When he plays timid, like he has been in the previous postseason games, they play timid, and they can't win. I mean, they got, you know, Clippers stomped them in the first game.
Mm-hmm. I think Houston's bench. Let me take a step back. I think the bench play in this series it might actually be the deciding factor of which bench shows up a little bit more than the other. Okay. So the Clippers
have no bench.
Well, they've got Jamal Crawford. Okay. I love Jamal.
I don't count Jamal Crawford.
You don't. No, I don't know if that's out of disrespect.
It's not. He's more like that six man starter. He's in there for a lot of the game.
Right, but so they've got Crawford. They've got Big Baby, who made surprising contributions. And then it falls off. I know everyone's talked about it, but they've got, can Hidu step up for a game or so? Austin Rivers. Here's the thing with Austin Rivers. He's in a starting role right now. That's not meant to be him, right?
No.
I'm not talking about in the future and the value he may or may not add to a team. He helped them win a game against the Spurs. Mm-hmm. And people talk about, well, you know what? That got them, that let them advance. They got past that series. They got past that opponent. Austin Rivers contributed to that one game that got them a win. That might be all he's good for the playoffs, right? Yeah, they might need one of those type of games from Turklu. They need one of those guys to come off the bench and give them one of those games that they'll steal from Houston as this is the Hidu game. This is the game he got 20 points and we never thought it would happen. Or this is when Spencer Hawes finally came in, hit three threes, won us that game in the fourth quarter. They're going to need one of those because Houston's bench can be very explosive, and that might actually help push things over. It's between Josh Smith and Corey Brewer, the two main offensive forces I look at, and when they're not producing, I think that really hurts them. Mm-hmm. The trick with Josh Smith is small doses. I'm not saying he needs to go for 20 points. I'm saying he needs to be actively involved in the game.
Yeah.
When he's blocked a couple shots, snagged 5-7 rebounds, he's had about 4 assists and maybe 2 or 3 buckets, that's the kind of Josh Smith game you want. You don't want a 20-point game from him because that means he probably took about 20 shots.
Absolutely.
If he goes 3-for-5 from deep, gets a dunk or two, and then is through a couple lobs to Dwight, or at least assisted on some things, you get a complete game from him. Everything's on the low side. Everything could be under 10. But just overall involvement, that's deadly. And then you get Corey Brewer jacking up about 10 threes. That's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, you make a very good point.
I think that's what it comes down to. But
I think Blake Griffin right now is in a zone.
Yeah, that's the other side of it too.
I think he's in the zone. I think you get CP back here playing.
Yeah.
And it's not just playing. I think if he's 50% or more, maybe let's say 75%. I see the Clippers kind of rolling here. I feel like they have a good, you know, for them they have a good matchup, and I think Blake is just in that zone, and he's so hard to beat when he's like that. I mean, that little stretch where he hit third quarter or so, about 8 points in a row. He had a couple of little drop down, you know, teardrop alley-oops. I mean, he just looked. Hey, you're just like, this guy's the best player. You know, he's the best player on the floor right now. You're watching somebody really coming. You know, I mean, he's been coming into his own, but you can really see the work that he's put into it. I think they could take it.
Yeah.
Harden at an MVP level and Dwight Howard playing tough. And like you said, their bench is much deeper.
I want to see some passion from the Rockets, though.
Yeah.
Play with a purpose. Play like you want it. Play like you mean it.
Well, Harden plays with a passion, but you never see it. He's not an over-emotional guy. Like, you know he is because you see him. It's in his play, but it's never in his reactionary kind of, outgoingness. He's not, you know, he's not that Westbrook. He's not going to be banging his chest. He's not going to, you know, do anything.
He'll stir that soup, though, when he makes a couple threes. Mm-hmm. But, no, I hear what you're saying. It'll be interesting to see how it turns out. Let's shift gears. Let's talk about the Warriors and Grizzlies. What do you say? This is a surprising 1-1, right? I said sweep. I said sweep.
I said sweep too, but if you remember, I said only sweep if Mike Conley didn't come
this
back.
This is true.
Memphis is a completely different team.
Yes.
With Mike Conley in there. What a gutsy performance he put on.
22 points.
He can barely see out of that eye.
22 points on 8-12 shooting.
Every time, you know, he got a breeze blown on that face, you could tell he winced. I mean, he was hurting.
Yes, absolutely.
But I tell you what, the only way the Warriors lose this series is they beat themselves like they did last night. They shot 26%. from three-point land. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen whatever.
It's not going to do it.
That, you know, what is that? Once? I bet you could count on one hand how many times they've shot that percentage, that low a percentage from three-point line, you know, this entire season.
Mm-hmm. Steph Curry was 2 of 11.
Yeah.
2-11 is not going to cut it, obviously.
No, I mean,
and Dre was 0 for 3. Harrison Barnes was 0 for 2. Klay Thompson was 1 for 6.
Yeah, you know it's bad when you see Klay Thompson airballing open 3.
Steph Curry and Klay Thompson were combined 3 for 17. I mean, that's abnormal. So this is also stems from the Seth Partnow piece was, well, they had shots. They normally make them, whatever the case is.
It's just not going to work for them, right? So what Seth's piece was saying was, okay, well, they had open shots, relatively open shots. Not all shots are created equal. Not all open shots are created equal. Give some credit to the Grizzlies' defense. That's the foundation of this team. When their defense is able to play like that, I mean, they've typically won. They were a great team in the West. By and large, they were the second-best team in the West all season. Can they do that 3 more times is the trick. Realistically, no. I mean, regular season showed us anything, is that this is a bit of an anomaly for the Warriors. You'd expect them to make adjustments just like everyone else. You've got an entire series to game plan against this. So now each team has felt each other out at this point and seen what each is capable of. And
you know, to me, I didn't see – I'll give Memphis credit. They played good defense. But I didn't see anything out of the ordinary that to say, okay, wow, Memphis has really stepped up. I thought their offensive game – stepped up much better. You know, I thought that was much more fluid. Mike Conley was in there. He was hitting shots. He was doing things, you know, scoring the basketball much better than they did without him. I didn't see much in the offense. They had open shots. Golden State had open 3 balls, normal shots that they hit all year, and they just missed. It was an off game. Mm-hmm. They still only lost by, what, 7?
Mm-hmm.
They shot 34%? They want.
It's a whole different game.
Yep.
And I think that's part of what Seth's piece was saying also, is that we're looking at small sample sizes of small sample sizes, if that makes sense. We're already saying, okay, let's just look at the playoffs. Then we're saying, okay, now let's look at this opponent that they've been game planning against,
mm-hmm.
and know their tendencies already. And then on top of that, if you just so happen to miss the shot, you miss the shot. Like, there's a regression to the mean that will likely occur here where they don't miss as many.
I can't think of a scenario where 3 games in a row all the Golden State Warriors shoot that terribly.
That's true.
Somebody's going to be on fire.
Mm-hmm.
It may be 2 people off or 3 people off, but there's going to be a couple other ones that are stroking that 3 ball. And that, you know, the Grizzlies are not a good 3-point shooting team.
No, not at all. Their offense has never been predicated on that. I said before the series started I was concerned about Harrison Barnes. He said 10 points in one game, 11 points in the first game. These are the kind of games that would be a good opportunity for him to go off. I think everyone's so concerned with Draymond, Clay, and Steph that he's the guy that could just go for 20
Absolutely.
Each game, and they wouldn't have a solution because they can't cover everyone all the time, mm-hmm. kind of philosophy. That would be the difference maker right there, I would think. But these games that stay in the 80s and 90s are obviously going to favor the Grizzlies, despite Golden State having the best defense in the league this year. The Grizzlies kind of pride themselves on defense more so, and I shouldn't say that because Golden State's prided themselves on defense absolutely all year. It's just a different style, it seems like. They still played at a very fast pace. And pride themselves on defense. So it'll be very interesting to see how Game 3 goes. Obviously, slow pace favors the Grizzlies.
Absolutely. I think a lot of that pace was dictated on the fact that, you know, Golden State was shooting,
mm-hmm.
you know, horribly. I think, in my honest opinion, I think they have a big bounce back, and I think they kind of slam the Memphis Grizzlies at home in Game 3. I have a feeling they're just, you know, I see this team bouncing back in big ways. Uh-huh. You know, I just, you watch them and you have that kind of, you know, you get that kind of feeling from them. I see Curry having a big game. I see Klay Thompson having a huge game. And he's been huge against the Grizzlies all year. I see him coming out and just firing on all cylinders.
I'm scanning through the box score real quick from game two, and for the most part, aside from Courtney Lee and Beno Udrih, I argue that the core Grizzlies all had about, especially offensively, games on par with what they're capable of, right?
Yep.
You don't expect a lot more from Randolph, or certainly not Mike Conley, right? Gasol maybe a little bit more, but overall his shooting, he shot 50% and everything. Courtney Lee only shot like 39%, 5 of 13. He was 2 for 4 from deep. Mm-hmm. The point being, aside from a big bump in Courtney Lee's shooting, that the conditions of that game might have been the best we're going to see from Memphis.
I was just about to say
Memphis is going to have to hope for that kind of effort every game coming forward, up that pace that they can dictate, and to just continually try to shut down Golden State and force those misses, get lucky on those misses, whatever the case is, rebound those misses, whatever it is, but let Golden State keep missing and go with that. It's hard to think, though, that Golden State would play three more games in this stretch that resemble this one.
And only hit 6 3-pointers.
And not score 100 points at least. So.
I can't see it either. It's just one of those things. Those guys just they just shoot the ball so well, and they work on it, and it's ethic, and it's not a, you know, it's not a fluke where they've just all of a sudden picked up this, you know, magical playoff 3-pointer. This is, you know, this is a scenario where I don't see Memphis just being a great team. They just can't score enough to stay with
Golden State. So do they win another game in the series? Or is it a five-gamer?
I'm going to say a five-gamer.
Okay.
It's emotional a win as it was to have Mike Conley back. I think you're right that's probably what we're going to get from Memphis throughout the series.
Seems like it.
And I don't think, you know, and the anomaly there was Golden State shot themselves out of that victory. Still only lost by 7. Worst shooting performance they've had all year.
So let's rattle through this again real quick and get both our predictions on this. So, Grizzlies-Warriors, how many games?
5.
Okay. Los Angeles Clippers and Houston Rockets, how many games and who?
I'm thinking going 6, and I'm taking the Clippers with Chris Paul healthy.
Okay, I will go 6 games for the Warriors, and I will go 6 games for the Clippers. Wizards Hawks, how many? And who?
You know, as much as I want to be the homer, I can't. I'm going to say Wiz pick up. This is saying John Wall is no-show for the rest of the series and or postseason. They pick up an emotional win. In game 3, they lose the rest. So I'm looking Hawks in 6.
I'll say Wizards in 6. Next, Cavs Bulls.
Nice! I like it.
Cavs Bulls, who do you like?
I think the Bulls take this. I think the Bulls take this in 6.
In 6? Did you not remember the beginning of this podcast? It's going to be Bulls in 7. Rest!
Well,
I'm not here to judge. You say Bulls in 6,
Bulls in 6. I think they're going to get one of those. Where Derrick Rose only has a day rest. They're going to pull one out.
Wow. It's breaking all the conventions that I see as normal. I am going against
everything.
Oh, this is why we represent the yin and the yang of basketball, I suppose. All right, so we got a few minutes real quick. You want to talk about most improved player?
Yes, absolutely.
So Jimmy Butler wins. I don't think that's a surprise necessarily, right?
I don't think so either. I mean, he put a lot of work into that. The jump shot on the in the offseason. I think he's a perennial scorer. I mean, he's great defender.
Jimmy Butler was fantastic. I think some of the question marks were Rudy Gobert, Hassan Whiteside, and one, Draymond Green. What are your thoughts on those as second, third, fourth candidates? Should either of them won, any of them won, instead of
Draymond Green, can you really say Draymond Green? Because this is the first time he's really come out and just been able to play. So he didn't have a season of just lackluster play. He just doesn't have a season behind him. Whiteside, kind of the same thing. I can't lump those guys in there. To be honest, with just performance and watching, I would have put, I know it's kind of, you can't really throw somebody who's already an all-star, but just, I think Blake Griffin should have been, you know, included in there. I mean, he is just getting better, and he's such an improved player.
Yeah, some people said Anthony Davis also, which I thought was interesting.
Anthony Davis is kind of he's kind of been an all-star since he got in the league.
Yeah, you could argue that every award is really hard to judge and gauge and measure and all this. Most improved is one of the more complicated, I think.
I think so, too.
It's not like everyone's starting at the same baseline here. Mm-hmm. So measuring one person's jump to the next and how much of that is like the rookie year to second year jump versus, oh, wow, they really came into their own kind of jump. And or like Anthony Davis going from very good to perennial superstar versus Jimmy Butler going from strong role player to definite all-star. Like, which one? What's greater there?
What about Steph Curry? I mean, going from how he was last season, which was he was a great player in the league, but you never were like, okay, Steph Curry needs to be an MVP, to an MVP caliber year, not just on a freak thing, but he completely improved his game. Mm-hmm. This is a very weird award for me.
Very strange.
It's kind of, I would love to see how they really take these names and put them in the, you know, and line them up on the analytical side.
To think. Defensive player of the year, the Warriors have a second place finisher in Green, right? MVP, they win it. Executive of the year, they win it. Coach of the year, they have a second place finisher in Steve Kerr. Most improved player, they have a second place finisher in Draymond Green. If they hadn't won MVP, executive of the year, whatever, it was going to start to look a little weird that you have this amazing team that can't pick up any hardware in the offseason. So I'm very curious to see how history looks back on all of this.
Yes.
But regardless, anything else you want to talk about?
No, that's it for me.
That's good. I think episode 4 is
episode
in the books.
Episode 4 is in the books.
Before I butcher any more of the English language, put it here.
All right.
Episode 4.
Yes,
thanks,
sir.
Thanks for listening. You got to this from iTunes or from Nylon Calculus. Like us on iTunes. Leave feedback. Put comments in. You might have got to us from SoundCloud either, from the HP Basketball channel. But regardless, we love feedback. We want questions, more and more questions. Hope you're enjoying this. We're going to keep doing this through the postseason for sure.
We're going to keep going all the way.
Otherwise, thanks for tuning in. This was episode 4 of
four.
The Long
Two.
I got to stop. I don't
weekend.
Know what I'm talking about. Yep, enjoy.